My name is Sarah Kim, and I'm from Austin, Texas. I'm a Cheeselandian because while life is great, cheese makes it better. Go to Cheeselandia.com to learn more, and if it's for you, sign up.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues that sin. It's gonna get you some.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm Damon Bolte.
My name is Souther Teague.
And I'm Greg Benson.
Gentlemen.
Happy New Year, guys.
Happy 2021.
Holy cow, we made it.
We did it. Did.
Also, we made it to 10 years, guys. Today is our 10-year anniversary show.
Woo!
It was funny because last year, with all the other shit showy things that were happening, I thought last year was 10 years. So I was like planning some big party, and then I realized it was the 9 year, and that's not really a milestone, I guess. I guess every year you make it is a milestone, but I'm glad we actually made it to 10 years.
So, happy second consecutive 10 year anniversary, Damon.
Yeah. Thanks. What a year.
10 years in holding. Pretty amazing also, you know, just to look back at the archive of shows that have been on, guests that we've had. The journey that this show has made and frankly our industry as a whole, the past 10 years I think have been pretty sort of the skyrocketing. I think the quote unquote cocktail revolution that we talk about all the time has been going on for about 20, maybe a little bit more. So that last 10 years are just when it's just like really kind of, you know, blasted into the stratosphere. I'm pretty stoked to have been, you know, part of all this and of course being in the business itself.
Yeah, it's like the last 10 years were like that part, that middle part in Bohemian Rhapsody where it starts getting really crazy, like the opera part. Yeah. that's what it was. So then I guess the next 10 years will be where it starts rocking out. I don't know. I don't know if my analogies are working today. It's a little earlier here on the West Coast. But it was cool. Like the last year, the last episode we had, we talked about the previous 10 years of the cocktail world and spirits world. And I think it's interesting to kind of forecast what's going on, what we think is going to happen, you know, in the next 10 years or even next year. I mean, like right now we're in such a strange period, you know, with, you know, a lot of places are closing or even if they are open, you know, we're looking at very abbreviated selections and service styles. So it's, you know, I hate to say nowhere to go but up, but because, you know, we're not through this yet, but it's still exciting. I mean, even just seeing how people have pivoted their business models to accommodate the times has been very interesting. I know, Souther, you are a cobbler, aren't you? Like,
yeah.
Are you close to, don't you have your own shoes now? Or
I'm a shoemaker. Yeah. I've generated a puzzle. Of course, you know, we've now built an actual storefront. So we're a store that sells, drinks and spirits and barware. And yeah, it's been a tumultuous, are we at 11 months now, 10 months? Holy smoke, it's crazy. It's been tumultuous, quite a wild ride. You really, you have to dig deep and figure out, you know, I guess the world really shows you what your metal is. And there's a lot of introspection. Happy to still be here. In whatever capacity that we are. I keep saying to people, you know, there's highs and lows, and I'm certainly, you know, I'm not afraid to admit that I suffer from a lot of those sort of mental barriers that get in my way. But I think all throughout the past year, my internal monologue and what I say to people on the outside when I'm having better days is if I'm going to go down, I'm going to go down swinging. So, you know, that's been sort of our ethos. All throughout this, we're fighting for survival, and we're not going to stop fighting until there's literally no breath left in us. So at this point, it looks like we're going to get through this thing. But then when we get through it, it's a matter of basically starting over.
Yeah. I mean, you
know, it's not going to be reopening. It's going to be kind of like grand opening.
Sure. Exactly. Well, I've also delved into the fashion world, Souther, recently.
Oh, yeah. So,
I now am a collaborator with one of my favorite shops called Epaulette. I actually have my own Damon Bolte X Epaulette cosmic Thunderbird tie-dye sweatpants. So,
I didn't think the last word in that sentence was going to be sweatpants.
It was all tracking until sweatpants, right? Yeah. No, but I mean, think about that. You know, like I've worked with this brand, this clothing brand. They're based out of Brooklyn, now California. But you know, they've been making suits and shirts. You know, this is kind of a testament to where, like, kind of what we were talking about with the last 10 years. So, like, a lot of the features, like the first time I was in GQ, everything I was wearing was from that shop, right?
Humble brag. The first time I was in GQ.
Well, come on. Yeah, man, come on.
Yeah, a lot can happen in 10 years.
Yeah.
So, but the thing is, like, it's funny because, like, a lot of those magazine features and book, like, placements and stuff like that, like, I'm wearing stuff from that shop, and it's like suits and ties and vests and, you know, waistcoats and stuff like that. But then, you know, now that same company I'm doing a tie-dye sweatpant with. So it's kind of like a sign of the times, right? It's like how things have shifted in not only the bar world, but like in the world in general. Like we're doing, there's nothing to get dressed up for, you know what I mean? And, you know, it's a sweatpant. So when you're on your Zoom meetings, no one needs to know that you're not wearing actual, like, pants, if you're wearing pants at all.
Right.
So it's just kind of a fun sign of the times. But anyway, they're pretty sweet. They're already almost sold out, by the way.
Get your pairs now, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, yeah,
exactly.
we'll get that link up in the show notes.
Yeah, exactly. We should. You know, speaking of, like, just things being a little different, you know, it's been interesting not only to see the way, obviously, that the cocktail world has changed and progressed throughout the past decade, but spirits, obviously, are the baseline of that. And I'm really excited to have our guest on the show today because the kind of modern style of distillation that is involved with this. We've been talking about getting Dave on the show for, I've been talking with his people for like a year or two now, I guess. So it's great to finally have him in the studio, the virtual studio, that is. And I'm really happy to drink some whiskey at 9 a.m. in California. So, hey, Greg, why don't you introduce our guest today?
Yeah, absolutely. So today joining us in the studio, we have David Vitale of Starward Whiskey in Melbourne, Australia. Welcome, man. Thank you so much for joining us. Welcome.
Thanks, Greg. Thanks, Damon. So nice to be here. It has been a while, but I think I was holding out for the 10th anniversary.
Oh, nice.
I figured that was the case.
Well, thanks for – are you getting up this early or are you staying up this late for us? Because it's nearly, what, 4:30 in the morning there, eh?
Well, I'll let you in on a little secret. I actually moved to the United States at the beginning of 2019 to kind of help get the brand going over here. So – it's nice. West Coast time, so it's good.
Oh, so you're on my coast.
Uh-huh, in Seattle.
Oh, right.
Okay,
on.
Cool.
Oh, outstanding.
Well, so, great. You can now. I don't feel so bad for drinking whiskey at 9 a.m. Great.
No, I'm right here with you, buddy.
I don't feel bad about great. Drinking whiskey cheers at any that. Time. And speaking of that, if we're gonna drink some whiskey, and I damn straight we are. Which you sent? I got two that you sent me here. The Nova and the Twofold. Which one should I begin with on the show?
I'd begin with Twofold for a few reasons. I think it's a great all-rounder, and I do, you know, I kind of in my masterclasses talk about it as a breakfast whiskey. So given that it's
perfect,
nothing morning, like a breakfast whiskey.
It's probably the right time, you know, a little on your oatmeal in the morning really gets you going.
Yeah, I mean, it's ancient grains, right?
yeah, of course, yeah. So, it's pretty exciting. Pretty exciting. Well, I mean, I moved to the United States 2 years ago to launch the brand, but we actually started the journey in 2007. So that's like coming up to 14 years in April, where I had a bit of a moment. I was working at a distillery in Tasmania called the Lark Distillery, and they made amazing single malt whiskey. And I guess at that point, my aspirations for their business and their aspirations for their business were a little different. You know, I wanted to scale up and think about a global kind of opportunity for Australian whiskey, and they were like, look, you know what, we're going along really well, and we just like kind of making sure that we've got enough for the people in our community, in our whiskey community. It's like, okay, that's fine, but we think it's a great idea and you should go and do it. So with their support, I kind of took the plunge and set up the distillery. And the thing that I guess got me into whiskey in the first place and working at Lark was I'm actually a frustrated home brewer. You know, like, I mean, I've kind of established this business with millions of dollars of whiskey just because I like making beer, which is kind of a bit perverted. But, you know, obviously good beer doesn't travel well. And, you know, for us, we wanted to have something that we could take to the world that could kind of really talk to the place it's made, like great whiskeys do, both in terms of the ingredients that we use, but also, you know, the culture of the place it's made, you know, in Melbourne.
Yeah, I mean, let's talk about that. Yeah, let's talk about that a little bit. There aren't a lot of, at least exports anyway, there aren't a lot of whiskeys coming out of Australia in general. Why do you think that is? And I know you have a phrase that you use, elemental maturation. That has to do with the wildly fluctuating weather there, right?
Yeah.
Do you think it's just such a challenge for a whiskey maker to produce in such a volatile environment?
I think, you know, we're still a young industry. So a lot of the producers have really, you know, cash flowed their way to scale, which is extremely difficult to do, given that a lot of the distilleries just make whiskey. They're not like gin producers or doing other kind of production on the side. So just the ability to kind of scale up to a level where you can support domestic demand and then start to think about export markets and then jump through the, I wouldn't even call them hoops. It's almost like a tough mudder exercise to even start selling booze in the United States, you know, like razor wire crawling through mud and like, you know,
yeah,
it's an endurance just to kind of turn up, right? From a compliance point of view, I think
that has to do with the fact that, you know, again, we talk about this all the time, how the federal government in its lack of wisdom after prohibition allowed every state to govern how the sale and consumption of alcohol is used in their state and even county by county. So yeah, you're right. It's a minefield that's full of challenges that are unforeseen. You feel like you've got the system down and then you move to the next place and it's completely different.
Yeah.
It's trying to deal with 50 countries.
100%. I think it has more in common with the EU. You know, the United States has more in common with the EU than perhaps we'd all like to admit, you know, just in terms of that, you know, common currency, you know, central government sort of big policies, but then state to state, it's like very, very, very different cultures and different places, which I love. You know, like, it's for me, you know, it's very cliche, but it's a dream come true. Here I am, you know, talking to you guys about an Australian whiskey, and getting out into different markets is always a lot of fun because, in as much as they're different cultures and, you know, Australian culture is very different to American culture, there's always something that connects the two. And, you know, usually for me, that's food. You know, like, I think, you know, Melbourne's kind of got a famed foodie credential. You know, like, it's one of the foodie capitals of the world. And so, you know, going into different places and looking at the food culture is always a lot of fun, whether it's sort of generations of tradition that sort of have evolved, or whether it's, you know, new waves of migrants kind of bringing a new flavor to the scene. You know, both of them are really exciting for me because it's all new, you know.
Yeah, well, let's talk about that a little bit, because you mentioned when we were talking a little bit before the show that this, you know, this venture is very, very driven by a sense of place and a real love that you have that I can hear when you talk about Melbourne and kind of the, you know, the pride that it has in being, I think the way you put it is like good food without a lot of stuffiness. And It was really interesting to hear you say that you were a frustrated homebrewer, because I know a lot of frustrated homebrewers, and not one of them has said, oh, I can't get this right. I'm going to try and do something that's much more difficult, both chemically and then to sell later. So yeah. Talk a little bit about your journey and sort of how the sense of place from your hometown kind of informed that a little bit.
Yeah, look, I mean, yeah, as I said, Melbourne's just such an amazing city. And, you know, we can talk about climate later on because I think it's a really important aspect to why this whiskey can only come from one place. But, you know, I come from a family that migrated from Sicily. So my parents are Sicilian, and but I was born in Australia. And obviously, you know, big Italian families get together for the big holidays, and food's a central part of that. And I think it's also, you know, we touched on it before, like I grew up with Italian friends, Vietnamese friends, Greek friends, Lebanese friends. That era from, you know, from the late 50s right through to the, well, to now, you know, like there's a lot of African migration now happening, had a profound impact on the diversity of the city, obviously, but more than that, it had a huge impact on the food scene. And so it's just to me, if we're talking about a whiskey from the place it's made, of course ingredients play into that, but culture is such an important part of that, and food is such an important part of Melbourne's identity, that for us we just felt like we'd be doing Melbourne and the great restaurants of the city a disservice if we didn't craft a whiskey that could kind of sit at the table and be versatile enough to work with cocktails and food. You know, so that's kind of been the genesis of this, is that, you know, if I'm not bringing beer to the big Vitali family dinners, then and lunches at Christmas, then I better have a whiskey that could stand up in a cocktail to be versatile enough to make great drinks for them, you know, in that fashion.
Absolutely. I love that you're talking about food being a very important part of these gatherings. I mean, like, to me, you know, when someone asks me, when I order a martini and they ask me how I want it garnished, I say with a dozen oysters, you know? So like, you know, especially like coming from Sicily, you know, that's, I used to run the bar programs for restaurant group, Frankie's, Spuntino in Brooklyn, and you know, it was all about the kind of like family vibes and big meals, and that to me has really changed the way that I enjoy myself in day to day. You know, I'm drinking whiskey at 9 a.m. right now, you know, of course, but but I've got some snacks in front of me too. But I think, you know, for me, looking at these whiskeys and kind of like the way that you talked about getting started with the twofold. You know, to me, it is about that kind of communal vibe. You said, like, bringing this whiskey to the table, to a dinner, and sharing it. You know, there's a note here, too, that says, a delicious whiskey for sharing and mixing and not reserved for special occasions. I think that's really important to note. Not reserved for special occasions. That's really cool. Because, like, you know, Souther and I talk about this all the time. He says, I'm a consumer, not a collector. And, you know, that's, you know, I feel like the first time I got a bottle of Starward, I held on to it and, like, it was one of those things. It was like a cool, kind of hard to get whiskey. So I kind of hoarded it, you know, cause I wasn't sure when I would see it again, like I do with like Havana Club rums and things like that. But I like that you just came out and said it, you know, this is meant to be consumed. That's right.
Really, yeah. Cool. Yeah. It's the, you know, it's the sharing cabinet whiskey, not the special occasion cabinet. You know, we've got plenty of those, you know, like, and to me, just getting back to like that ambition of like, well, I want to take something to the world. I want some, you know, I want the rest of the world to see how great Australian whiskey is. And, you know, I'm not Robbins and Caruso in this. There's, you know, tens of whiskey distillers. They just don't have enough inventory to export. You know, that's the challenge. But they're all making amazing whiskey. And it's important for me that the world knows that, you know. And so if I was planning to do that, then coming out with $150, you know, single malt, single cask whiskey as our prime example of how great whiskey is going to really narrow down the audience for that. And like it doesn't achieve the purpose, you know. So for me, it was always about, we're going to have to scale up. We're going to have to find a way of, you know, making enough delicious whiskey that kind of sets it apart from those other whiskeys in the sharing cabinet. Because let's face it, you know, once you start to get into that, I'm going to have one or two different versions of the same thing in my cabinet across five different styles. So maybe 10 or 12 bottles of whiskey in that sharing cabinet. That's a pretty tight space to elbow some space into to say, hey, there should be a spot for an Australian whiskey here. Now, obviously, being Australian, we're just going to elbow our way in anyway. But like, you know, like for me, it was like, okay, well, if we want to be in that sharing cabinet, we better stand for something that's really different to what's already there, because otherwise, why bother? And, you know, a lot of the older Australian whiskey distilleries were anchored in a really Scotch whiskey single malt mindset, to the point at which one of them said, you know, we make Australian whiskey in the finest of Scottish traditions. And I'm sort of talking to the distiller going, this whiskey's amazing, but like, if you're propositioning your customers saying we're as good as Scotch whiskey, then they're just going to buy the Scotch, you know, like, and so you're doing Scotch a disservice, because you can't out-Scotch Scots, but more importantly, you're doing yourself a disservice, because there's so much more to what you're doing than just, you know, using the finest of Scottish traditions to make your whiskey. And so that was always in the back of my mind, that we've got to have permission to be in that sharing cabinet. And the reason we get it is, putting taste to one side, because that's always a little subjective, is that it's got to stand for something as distinctive as peated whiskey does for Scotch whiskey, and, you know, rye does for, you know, a high rye content bourbon does for American whiskey, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, so far, seems to me you're pretty much kicking ass, right? I'm sipping right now on the Twofold, which won gold at San Francisco World Spirits in 2020 and was also best Australian blended whiskey for both 2019 and 2020, right? So you've come on strong and you're kicking ass. This seems like a good spot to take a break. We'll come right back and keep talking to David Vitale from Starward Whiskey in Melbourne, Australia. Stand by.
My name is Sarah Kim and I'm from Austin, Texas. I'm a Cheeselandian because while life is great, cheese makes it better. Wisconsin cheese has proven time and time again to be a delicious expression of craft, hard work, and tradition. As a Cheeselandian, I am able to share a Gouda experience with fellow cheese and food lovers nationwide, as well as connect with cheese producers and cheesemongers, taking my love of cheese to another level. I invite you to join Cheeselandia because during these difficult times, it has been even more important to take it easy and get cheesy. The Cheeselandia community and events have been the glue helping to keep us together and connected, and I would love it if you would join me. And let's face it, if you hear the word cheese and get a little hungry, then you've found a place you can call home. To find out more about Cheeselandia, go to cheeselandia.com.
And we're back. You're listening to The Speakeasy on Heritage Radio Network. And in the studio today, we have Dave Vitale from Starward Whiskey out of Australia. I have one question for you, Dave. Why Seattle?
Love. It's that simple. Like, my wife actually was born in Australia to American parents, and she moved back to the United States, to the Pacific Northwest, and, you know, in the Seattle area, when she was about 10 or 11. And she came on a working holiday to Australia. We met within about a week, and then I did promise her mum that I'd bring her back one day. So, there's another reason why I set up a distillery, is to give myself a job to do when I did bring her back. So, yeah, it's been great actually having them so close by. Obviously, the last 12 months have been a bit more complicated, but, you know, just sort of helicoptering in or parachuting into a new place with an established sort of family network's a huge, huge, huge advantage.
Sure. Yeah. In Seattle, Portland, that whole area is really cool.
Wow, it's amazing.
It's interesting to to me, it's like a lot of people who come into the United States, they usually go to LA or New York. So I think it's cool that you chose kind of a different path, but it was already kind of laid out for you.
It was. Yeah. And I have to say I've fallen in, I thought I'd never kind of, you know, that Melbourne would always be my first love. And I guess it is, but like I've found out that I'm a bit more promiscuous when it comes to like my love interests in cities, you know. So like this is definitely a place I've fallen in love with, and a beautiful, like just such a beautiful place to come home to when I'm traveling on the road. So yeah, Seattle's great. And, you know, the culture here is probably most Melbourne-like of all of the cities in the United States, just in terms of that, the food scene and the coffee culture.
Yeah, cafe and coffee culture is a big thing, right?
Yeah, I mean, just trying to explain to, Seattle baristas that actually the best coffee comes from Melbourne is often met with a bit of disdain, but like those that know respect it, which is good.
that's a brave mission to undertake.
Yeah.
going up to a Seattle barista and being like, well, actually.
Yeah. Let me tell you how to make a coffee. Yeah.
let's talk a little bit, because before the break, we were talking a little bit about Melbourne and sort of how the culture of that place really informed these whiskeys and kind of what you wanted them to be for, in a way, you know, how you wanted them to not be, you know, this thing that you would put up on a pedestal, but that you could enjoy with everybody in your life for any occasion, whether it's a special one or just, you know, I felt like having a nice dinner on a Tuesday. But there's also so much that's really interesting about the culture, the environment of Melbourne and the general proximity that it has to so much Australian wine, and also just kind of the climate that really informs these whiskies. And I'd love to hear you talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. So we've got, you know, within a day's drive of the city of Melbourne, 95% of red wine production that occurs in Australia happens from that sort of pocket, the Southeast Australian pocket of Australia, that the likes of, you know, regions like the Barossa Valley, Coonawarra, you know, so Barossa's big on Shiraz, Coonawarra's Cab Sav, an hour's drive from Melbourne we have the Yarra Valley, which is cool climate Pinot, and all of these winemakers obviously have a need for oak to kind of season, age their wine so that they sell it really well, right? So there was kind of a little bit of a thought bubble there. It's like, well, why would we import bourbon barrels from Kentucky or port or sherry barrels from Portugal or Spain when we can have these amazing wine barrels as a source for flavor, both in terms of oak, but that previous use. So that's one kind of thread. The other is that, you know, with Twofold, it's wheat and malted barley. So it's effectively a wheated whiskey that we're drinking. That's, you know, the wheat and barley grow in abundance, again, within a day's drive of the distillery. So that was always a no-brainer for us in terms of just sourcing that local product to create the mash bill for the whiskies. And then to your point, climate. Melbourne's famed for having four seasons in a day. So if you ever watch the Australian Formula One Grand Prix, which is in Melbourne, or the Australian Open, which is on shortly, you'll notice the weather changes quite dramatically. Like, you know, our weather people are, you know, professors in meteorology, like on TV, like they're just trying to predict what's happening next. And the reason for that is, again, our location. You know, obviously we all know that the outback is a huge desert, which is in the center part of Australia, but we also have another desert to our south called Antarctica. And so depending on, you know, depending on whether the wind's coming from the northwest, it's a hot, dry, oven-like wind. But if it's coming from the southwest, it's quite humid, frigid, freezing wind. And those temperature shifts can happen quickly, like within 30 minutes. and we can have a, you know, a 40 degree Fahrenheit shift in temperature and then back again, you know, 2 or 3 hours later. So it makes for quite a dramatic place to live, obviously, but in terms of aging whiskey, I think we've got the hardest working barrels in the world because they just always are expanding and contracting. And you know, the great thing about that is that, you know, we have, you know, a natural environment where age is less of a predictor of quality than it would be, say, for example, in the highlands of Scotland or, you know, high altitude places where it might be dry and cold.
Yeah, because the weather in Scotland is fairly predictable. Like, if it's sunny in Glasgow, people lose their freaking minds. But yeah, I imagine the barrels have a lot of, you know, like you said, they're hard working because there's so much of the character of them that's getting compressed into the whiskey over a comparatively short amount of time. And speaking of your whiskey, I'm done with the Twofold, and I'm about to crack open this Nova. Would you mind telling me a little bit about this?
Already drank the whole bottle?
Yeah, same.
Yeah. Are you not?
Sorry, yeah, I guess I have.
So Nova is... so we mentioned before that Twofold's a double grain, so it's wheated whiskey. So 60% wheat spirit, which is separately distilled and aged in red wine barrels, and then 40% single malt whiskey that's aged and you know, separately distilled and aged in wine barrels. So what we're drinking now in Nova is that 40% component that goes into Twofold, and it's a single malt whiskey. It's you know, I guess has a lot of complexity to it, but the trick that we wanted to kind of capture in this notion of being accessible, versatile, and something that might well be someone's first taste of not just Australian whiskey, but whiskeys from around the world, you know, not Scotch, not bourbon, not Irish whiskey, was that, you know, that it had depth and complexity, but without that poke you in the eyes intensity that some, you know, some of those single malt whiskeys can give you. So lots of, you know, and this is probably a great point to stop and talk about also the barrels that we're using, these red wine barrels. So that proximity to wineries is a huge advantage because all of these barrels are filled wet. So it's a full aging in red wine barrels, not a finish. And basically wine goes out, they get transported to the distillery, and then whiskey goes in, you know. So that's a really beautiful thing. And, you know, we kind of bet the farm on this process, 8-9 years ago. I didn't know it was going to work. I was kind of had an opportunity to source some barrels from an amazing winery called Yolumba, and they were too good to pass up. But what it did mean was, because they were wet, either I filled them or they were just going to turn and not be all that great. They'd taint the wine would taint the barrel. So it just meant that I needed to fill every last drop of immature spirit that I had in these barrels, and then hope that at the other end we'd have a product that tasted good. And fortunately for me, it worked out really well.
I mean, a pretty big gamble, but based on your knowledge and experience, you know, you kind of had a hypothesis that you knew what was going to come out, right?
Right. We were experimenting with wine from day one, with wine barrels, but the big shift was this wet fill process that really there was no evidence in the market that people, you know, that you'd certainly do, you transfer barrels that transfer whiskey that have been aged for a while into wet barrels, but not from the beginning. Typically they're shaved, toasted and recharred. So yeah, it was a big bet, but we made it. And I think the key thing is that what it does for the whiskey is give it a beautiful kind of fruit character profile that's different to whether, you know, different obviously to those fruit notes that you get from sherry or even the fruit characteristics you have in spirit, the White Dog. Those berries and creamy nut kind of characters. But also, because we're sourcing these wine barrels from winemakers, they're just a step up. You know, on the cheap side, a winemaker's spending $2,000 or $3,000 for a single barrel. That's an empty oak barrel. And, you know, on the cheap side at a bourbon or normal whiskey distillery, they're probably spending about $200 or $300. So the quality of oak that we have access to means that we get more chocolate, spice, sort of like the vanillin kind of characteristics coming through as well, which is pretty, pretty special. And of course that texture, you know, that wine has, that mid palate, sort of grippiness, which is, gives it a beautiful, amount of length as well. So, you know, obviously, if a whiskey aged in red wine barrels can't make a decent Manhattan, then we might as well shut the gates. But, you know, it's kind of funny because every time I walk, you know, when I was sort of on the road, you know, walk into a bar and say, you know, you should really think about using our whiskey for a Manhattan, they'd go, yeah, you and every other craft distiller walks in here and says, you should use our whiskey for a Manhattan. Then it's like, yeah, but it's aged in wine barrels. Like, yeah, actually, you've got a point, you know, and they give it a go and it's pretty outstanding.
Right, it's like I got an automatic leg up in that category.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the cool thing about this, too, I just want to point out, like, this is actually the first bottle of Starwort that I got, and I held on to for a long time. Because so I had a lot of time to, like, sit with this and kind of ponder on it. I did, of course, you know, you do the daiquiri test with a rum every time someone brings one in. And with a gin, you know, you make a martini or gin and tonic. This, I, you know, obviously I went with the Manhattan. But, like, to me, this whiskey is so, like, it's so cool on its own. And I know that that's, like, obviously what you want to go for as a distiller, but, like, it has this kind of, like, vibrant zing to it that, like, it's almost like, it's almost effervescent to me. You know, it's got, like, this brightness that, like, it kind of, like, dances on your tongue. So to me, I've always just, like, really enjoyed this on its own. And to be honest with you, like, for me, it's like these days, whenever I drink whiskey, I always drink whiskey soda. I drink highballs all the time. Like, it's a bad scene in my house. I mean, like, like, there's a lot of empty whiskey bottles and a lot of, like, crushed cans of La Croix. And you know, the thing with this one is that I like drinking on its own because it has, like, it's, like, playful, you know, but it's also deep and rich. So I don't know. It's just, like, one of the coolest whiskeys that I've tried lately. And to me, it also doesn't, like, I don't think about Scotch when I think about this whiskey. So I think that's, like, a cool thing about these whiskeys. I mean, like, the Twofold to me tastes more like a kind of a traditional single malt, but this one has so much more depth and complexity to it that it kind of stands on its own categorically. I think that's a really great thing for you and for the category of Australian whiskey. So you can break away from those kind of, like, those easily kind of, like, snackable kind of, like, you know, riffs on different distillates and kind of, like, sales chops, you know?
Yeah. And look, I think, you know, we're not Robinson Crusoe in that, right? Like, there's even in the United States, an amazing, you know, craft American whiskey scene, single malt scene. You know, up here in Seattle, we've got Westland, Copperworks. Down in Portland, there's Westwood. They're everywhere, right? Like, and I think it's like, and then, you know, across the pond in Taiwan, you've got Kavalan and Milk and Honey in Israel, and, you know, Europe's got a fair few amazing world whiskeys. We've got Indian whiskey. I think the time is right, right? Like, that people don't necessarily see, like, they understand that the intent of the distiller is not to imitate Scotch whiskey, but to kind of craft something that has a story to tell that's unique and of its own, you know. And it's a lot easier today to have that conversation with drinkers than it was, you know, eight years ago when we launched, you know. And and that's really exciting for me, because I think that, you know, the world whiskey categories, if we think about the next generation, like, is going to be not just a side note, but a real big part of the whiskey repertoire. And the diversity that you get is just as, you know, it's really, really exciting.
Well, let's talk about that before we wrap up here. I'm going to ask you to sort of look into the crystal ball a little bit and ask you what you think is going to happen in the next 5 to 10 years with the world whiskey category, because that's a name that I kind of hate, because you would never hear anybody talk about world food. And it seems especially silly because, like we've been talking about today with you, and like I've talked about with every, you know, person I've ever met who's making whiskey not in America, Canada, Ireland, Scotland, or Japan, they're very focused on getting something that's unique to where they're making it. Wherever it is, their mission is kind of like, we want this to taste like something that could only be made here. So what do you think is going to happen with that category as you get more people stepping their game up and kind of changing the shape of this category and getting people to recognize, oh, there are amazing whiskeys coming from Taiwan and India and Tasmania and places that I would have not associated with, you know, amazing single malt whiskey even 5 years ago.
Mm. Yeah. Oh, look, I think, you know, and it's the same issue that we've all faced, right? Like, just getting, you know, we need like, the Brazilian fan club, you know, talking about soccer now, like we need the Brazilian fan club with their vuvuzelas to come out and sort of like champion like the category. That's what we need, right? Like, it's just, you know, if you think about the incumbency of those other whiskies, that like we've got a big job to do. But I'm really, you know, encouraged. If you think about Japanese whiskey and talking to a lot of retail buyers, 8 or 9 years ago you couldn't give it away, right? And look at it now. And so I think that we've got a lot to be optimistic about if we just continue to turn up and offer people a real difference. And, you know, it's never about quality, right? Like, that's a hygiene factor. It's kind of like saying we'll beat Usain Bolt because we'll have, you know, we have legs. It's like, well, you need legs. We need quality, but it's not the reason why we'll win, right? It's really about setting ourselves apart and having a compelling kind of reason for people to make space in their sharing cabinet to put them in there. And I'm really excited. I think that it exists, you know, any of those countries, I'd be happy to take the keys to those distilleries as my own. You know, like, they're making amazing whiskey and they're, you know, they've got a great point of difference, and yeah, the future's really bright.
Amen, man. Well,
yeah, absolutely.
I certainly agree after drinking some of this whiskey. I mean, damn, this is, the rest of my day is looking bright, that's for sure.
I mean, the rest of my week's looking bright now that I understand what breakfast whiskey is. I'm feeling pretty good. I'll have a bowl of this instead of oatmeal.
It's the most important drink of the day.
That's right.
David, if folks that are listening to this wanted to get in touch with you and look into grabbing some of your whiskey and sort of see what you're up to, where would they be able to reach you on the socials?
Yeah, so Starwood Whiskey, that's without an E in the handle. So it's probably the, you know, on Instagram and Facebook are probably the easiest way. My Instagram handle's I am David Vitali. So you can look me up on that. And yeah, be happy to, would love to kind of do an in-person kind of catch up and walk you through some of the interesting barrels that we use from those wineries to pick apart even more like the complexity that's in these bottles.
Yeah, you just let us know when and we'll bring bagels and cream cheese. And...
sounds good. And I'll have to design my own pair of sweatpants to complement it.
Lounge around in the morning drinking whiskey with you. That'd be great.
Yeah, exactly.
Awesome. Well, that's it for the Speakeasy this week. Check out Heritage Radio Network for many more programs like this one, and check out Starwood Whiskey. This is one of my recent favorite whiskeys that I've tried in a very long time. So thanks for producing it, and thanks for being on the show today with us. And I look forward to seeing the bottom of this this bottle so I can grab another one.
Thanks, David.
Well, until next week, everyone, cheers.
Cheers, buddy. Thank you so much. Thanks, David.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues, that's him. It's gonna get you some in the end.
The Speakeasy is powered by Simplecast.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork.
Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows that you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.